Accession number 23175, Reel 4.
Mr. Hastings, Reel 4. You mentioned to me that whilst being a driver with the Searchlight Regiment, you were also the generator man. How did that work?
Well, what it is, the squad on the Searchlight, and it was known as a number 9. Some sites that are mobile, one, a Thornycroft, because the Searchlight was come mobile, and the generator was built into the lorry. And others that were wired on other transport to take from one place to place. But the Searchlight sites as a whole, they were static on the Yorkshire Moors. They didn't issue them about. So they gave us a diesel generator that was like on a trailer, built onto a trailer. And we had to man that. And we had to sleep in like a hollow somewhere, so it was away from the sound of the locator, at least 300 yards away or something from the Searchlight and the sound locator. And we had to sleep in a little bell tent on our own. I mean, the first Christmas of the war, I spent in a bell tent with others in a nice warm cabin. But I weathered that all right in a place called Eastfields Farm in Yorkshire, near Nunthorpe.
Was it a dirty job working the generator?
No, it was just, you had to just clean, keep it maintained and all that like, and clean it and start it up. Every now and then you had to start up, make sure it was warm. If we were to take post, got ME aircraft over, it would start instantly. It would start by, and they don't have starters them days on it. There was a big switchboard at one end of it, where the generator was, for the amps and volts and what have you. And there was also a field telephone, and they used to give the ring like that. And if I had that ring, like with some arrangement, I'd start it up and have it running, or taken over sometime, or so it would save fuel. And the room would get ready, and I'd put on full throttle. So when they did strike arc, well, up went the Searchlight. Yeah.
Of course, a lot of this would be night work, obviously, with the Searchlight.
Oh, yes. Mm.
And were you on kind of stand to during the night, or what was the system of working the unit?
Well, across the sites, where I was at the top of Broadbank sites for quite a few months, a year, over a year, I forget now. And we had sites all over the Yorkshire Moors, like that. And we had a hut on there, and the number 9, the generator hand, or the driver, he asked, the wooden cabinet finished, and there were a little quarry down there, so the sound didn't interfere with the sound locators, you see. And that was it. We used to stand, sometimes we'd get a take post, like, I don't know where they got it from, the sergeant in charge would get it. We'd all man up, I'd get the engine started up, they'd all get around the sound locator and on the searchlights ready. We might be standing there anywhere from 4 hours, 6 hours, or sometimes 8 hours during the night, right from the night, like, with Ellenbeck, where the Farling and Ale is now, like. We're there, I was on there for a bit, and I seem to have been up there for about 6 hours at a time sometimes.
Must have been exceptionally cold during the winter.
Yes, it was. The first winter of the war, I slept in a bell tent. Then later on, I got transferred to Wrecker Jetty. I slept in a bell tent there for a bit. Wrecker Jetty of all places. That was just after the turn of the year, like, you know. And when I opened the bell tent, the flap tent flap was like a door, you had, like. I had plenty of blankets and that over here, and I did survive all right. I didn't catch cold or anything. I just looked after the generator and that was it.
How much time would it take, say, for getting an alarm and getting out of tents and huts and getting the searchlight on?
Oh, within about 5 or 7 minutes, I would say.
And
I remember, really time, but I would say that. We're done very quickly.
And you'd practice that?
We had a sentry on all the time, 24 hours a day, a sentry on you, do you say? Well, he'd be keeping things an eye on things all the time, keeping things tip-top, because of the weather conditions and what have you. And within about 5 or 7 minutes, we'd like to strike arc. Didn't say we'd put the light on straight away. We'd take a layer, man these things, you see, ready. Like, there was two people in, like, what you call spotters, they had field glasses, and they sat in a chair and spun round. They had to search the heavens for the enemy planes coming over. Another thing we'd look for, planes would come over from Germany after bombing the enemy, like, and they'd be disabled somewhere or there, and they wanted to know where the nearest aerodrome was to land. And when we got that signal, we had to put our searchlight up vertical like that. And then we got orders and then point it in the direction that that aerodrome were ready to take these emergencies, you see. It would go straight up like that and it stayed down that direction. So the pilot would know he had to go along that where the searchlight pointed to that particular part. Like. Oh, it was well organised, early part of the war. We weren't prepared for the war, but we managed to keep up with it.
Well, where was the information coming from to the actual site that that an air raid was possible, though?
I don't know exactly where, but we had an observer corps at the time, I think, that was part of a team all over the country, you see. They're all in touch with each other. That's as far as I can tell you about that, Ari. Yeah.
But obviously, the
we got it very quickly, I know.
But the world thing
worked lovely, yes.
You were linked into this, to this system. Enemy aircraft, did you have much experience of enemy aircraft activity above you?
On one occasion, a slight enemy plane come over and he went up the valley and there was me and two more. We took our rifles with us, went up the valley and Sergeant Wilson, he remarked what we did, all the attachment didn't know that, about three or four of us went up. We went up the valley as far as we could, but we never found any aircraft. Like, it was flying a bit faster than we could walk, like a road, jog trot, and we come back. But we were excited at the time. It was somewhat out the boredom, we sat in the middle of the Yorkshire Moors. Something like that. We really got our teeth into it, you see. And we somebody have a good laugh and talk about it later on. I suppose we even today we laugh. We met these people. Like, what few of us is left now? Not many of us left now, is there?
Supplies, where were they coming from?
Where
were the supplies coming from to the sites? I think the food supplies and...
Oh, yes. We had the headquarters. Once they were at Gisbury, was our headquarters to begin the war. Now, we had another one at Scarborough later. We got fair in the Yorkshire Moors. So our headquarters was Scarborough, just outside of Scarborough.
And the sites, you say, were quite scattered across the moors. Could you see one site? Were you in sight of the next?
Oh, no, you couldn't see them. The only time you see them, when the lights went up at night, when they would take post at the strike arc, as they called it. Like.
So they're good distance apart?
Oh, they're good distance apart, yeah. I don't know how many miles apart, but they're a fairly good distance apart. Well, I mean, 5 or 6 miles on a map would be like about a quarter of an inch, wouldn't it? Or half an inch, I'd say, that at most. And you knew what direction they were, somewhere on the coast, somewhere inland, and all over the place.
What were you defending? I mean, out in the moors, there's nothing to defend there. Why did they stick you out there? Why not clustered around the main important ports or cities or
Well, I think at the beginning of the war, we were grossly undermanned under the train. Like, we had to do something a bit sharpish, like, you know, it was coming on after 38 scramble, like, for the year before, and like. When Chamberlain come back and eventually said we were at war, like, and I was in the Red Army a bit, and they were fairly well stretched, not organised, but in spite of that, I think they did a very good job with communications and that. Another thing that they do, that they keep us all occupied, our military training, discipline had to be maintained. And the one way to maintain discipline is to have route marches and parades and what have you. And training, isn't it? To keep on your toes, keep your mind active as well as your body.
Yes,
yeah. And they did quite a bit of that, yes.
Because on the site particularly, where you're just a small number of people, during the day must have been pretty...
Yes, it was. It was pretty rough. Our water supply was at slights at the top of Blue Bank there. There was a little stream across the world. I wonder if it's still there. And we used to get our water from there. We had a hut there, army hut, like wooden hut. And all that went in there. And we got called up. We were all territories from that local town at first. And then people, conscription was on at the time. People were getting called up, elderly people and all that. And one man we had, who was bald-headed, must have been in his mid-20s or born over the 30s. And he was a keen wrestler. And we sort of sit in the barrack at night, get together, like. I used to come up from our cabin in the quarry where I was when we go. I was joining the lads up there, like, and they had a radio going them days. And I can tell you some amusement about that as well. Anyway, this bloke was bald-headed in that. He was a wrestling fan. And we were sat round on our beds in that, like, in this cabin. He'd pull us on the floor and start wrestling with us. He said, wrestling's a good game. We used to hate it in a way, but we used to all enjoy it, like, you know. That's how we pass our time away. It was great like that.
So what kind of activities would keep you occupied during the day? You've mentioned that one, but what other activities to
well,
keep
there was
your mind occupied and your body occupied?
Just cleaning up, that's about all. Like, in them days, I bought myself a wireless, battery wireless, for my camcorder, but I spend most of my time down there, especially at night time on my own, for something to listen to. And I found out that the split makers on those set, we've got some donite wires, they called it, that's steel wire. And I run a line from my wireless set up to their big cabin so they could listen to it as well, because they didn't have a wireless in the cabin there. And them days, funny this, I nearly got bayoneted one day with my own men, and tell you what happens. They used to give over the radio, well, so-and-so, somewhere stationed somewhere, would he please go home as soon as possible, he's needed, something like that. Well, one of our members, we all come rightly for, we all more or less knew each other. And I found out if I unplugged it, I could use the speaker in my end as a microphone. So I used to unplug it, and I used to take the part of the radio announcer. And with so-and-so, I mentioned the man's name, like, I won't mention it to you now, like. With so-and-so, stationed somewhere in Yorkshire, was always somewhere in Yorkshire, or somewhere in Scotland or whatever. Would he please return up straight away, as he urgently needed his home and all this business? Well, I come up the site straight away, like, oh, the next morning I come up the that morning I come up the site about dinner time, like, and they're all about this, and this book was shocked about that. He believed it. I didn't really realise what I'd done. And I told him about it, and he got that angered. He run at us with a bayonet. I just admit, it nearly is with a bayonet, yeah. There's things like that used to happen, you know. We said, they used to come out of the blow, these things, but they were entertaining. We often talk about these things when we used to go into a pub or something like that later on. Remember when that happened so far? Oh, there's numerous things happened like that.
Inspections, were they regular? Did some officer inspect the site?
They come round now and they inspected the site, yes. Hmm. Sometimes we had a look come round, high ranking officer, to check all the generator gear and that. And I'd been on MT course, like, and they took me off. Grossman, it was a nice place, Grossman, little village of pub and all that. They put me at Ellerbeck, Paradale, you know, to stand in for there. So when he asked questions to there, I'd full marks on the MT course I've been on at Hutton Gate, Gisbury, and I could answer the questions all right. They were doing things like that, you know. We often have a good laugh at them. The things we'd get into, like a bit of a like verbal conflict we used to get with various things like that, you know. We used to always have a good laugh at it, like, you know.
Do you remember the effect of Dunkirk? And
yes, I remember that. That happened when we were at Farlandale, Ellerbeck, they called it. I remember one bloke, I also remember, and said, hey, let's watch what we do now. This bloke, Italy, they come over here before long. The people at that time, in England, I think, got the idea they're going to invade the Germans straight away. If they'd have done, they'd have got us. But the Germans didn't invade, fortunately. And I also remember that man said, we'll have to watch what we do now when Hitler comes over here and all that. All these people have been calling them, we'll have to keep quiet and all that business. I always remember that, it was yesterday.
Did they put you through any infantry training in case there was an invasion at that time?
Oh, yes, we used to go on that business, yes.
Well, what kind of training were you getting?
Well, it was just like running about behind trees and that, you know, and talks about, lectures about it, and doing a bit outside, like. The main idea, I think, it was a mixture of ideas, was to keep us occupied and maintain discipline about it. You had to do something like that to keep discipline going in the army, hadn't you? That was very important, that. Very important.
I think I may have asked you, how did you get on with the local people? There wouldn't be many around, obviously.
Oh, we've gone all right with those. In fact, I was always nosing about to engines and that. I messed about with radios them days. Oh, and another thing about them, we had radios, wireless as they called them days. Accumulator, you had to get accumulator charges up. Well, I found a way of charging the accumulator up without taking it to the garage. I used to hook into the circuit of the searchlight, so when they put the searchlight on, the accumulator was being charged up with a spare accumulator. That saved us going into the village to get the accumulator charged. I was always messing about like that. You've seen Last of the Summer Wine, haven't you? You know the man who was always in his overalls? That was me, that. I was always messing about with something like that. I was interested in something. I learned quite a bit in about engines when I was in the army, in the war and all that, diesel engines and that. The farmers in good stead later on.
Did you get to help the farmers in the fields or harvesting?
I think a bit now and then, not a great deal, like.
It was a very rural life that you were living in.
We often used to get sometimes invite the farmers' house for their meal or something, give us eggs and things like that. We'd buy them, and sometimes we'd help them with bits and pieces, like. My dad went to drive the pigs out or stones in there. We'd join in with them. Nobody used to ask us, so we'd just join in with them. Something to do. I remember once in North Africa, a bit of a stayed with us. There were a lot of Frenchmen out there in North Africa, and they decided to kill a pig, like, well, I've never seen a pig killed before, like, and I was amused at this, like, and I was shocked the way they cut his throat and just, like, hung it up, bladed that slowly, like, you know, and I mentioned some words, like swear words, and the Frenchman repeated them. I'll leave to your own imagination what swear words I used, like, I was surprised. Things like that, incidents.
You mentioned getting drafts in. Were these younger men that were coming into the unit and older men going out?
No, the way the older men going out, sometimes older men were given, like, older men in the territories, like, they were, well, on the searchlights, it wasn't a very robust thing to be in, like, it wasn't like the commandos like we're on today. They fit in with us all right.
I was thinking that with the, you know, with the losses of Dunkirk and the numbers were down in the infantry regiments, that some of the mid-20s and that kind of age would move up, were moving out of the searchlight sites, and younger men were coming in who were probably too young to go abroad, 19-year-olds. Was that happening with you?
Yes, I'll tell you what I did notice. Being in the regular army for 18 months, regular army has more discipline and more strict training than the territorials, obviously, the weekend soldiers and that. I did see a change come over after Dunkirk. We seemed to get more like the regular army as I knew it of yesteryear. Yeah.
The older regular.
They got more rigid and harder in the training and that, and discipline and that, which was a good thing. Because I realised when I did get an action later on overseas, I realised the importance of discipline.
Were you with the unit when some ATS arrived?
Yes. When went to Gisborough, that ATS there. And we've gone all right with them and all right, yeah. Sometimes we've gone with them, but on the whole, we mixed with them in a crowd-wise, but not, I don't know how to put this, Harry. There's no affairs going as far as I can say, or very few, to say the least of it, yeah.
But they didn't come down to site level, you didn't get them on the site?
No, they're on the site, yeah. They're all not up to sleep and everything, yeah.
And what was their task on the site? What was their role?
Well, I don't know, I forget. Working in the office, things like that, you know. Well, where you'd expect your employee woman, like, sometimes they help with a ration and cookouts and whatever, you know.
What was the method of feeding on a site of one searchlight? How did you feed yourselves?
Oh, well, that was very interesting. On the searchlight, there was, I think, 9 of us, or 10 of us, I forget now, for the NCO and that in charge. Sometimes we got one man who would want to be the cook, and sometimes nobody wanted to be the cook, so what we used to do was to take our turn. We used to put two of the cookhouse every day, and say you were in the cookhouse today, I'd come in with you to assist you, and then you'll be out tomorrow, and I'll take over the cook the next day, and we used to get organised like that, you see. Just common sense. And in a way, it'd give us something to do as well. We'd have some fun at times. Because when I went with my turn to be cook, I got the dinner ready, and I worked too well. I thought I didn't want to be late. Like, I don't remember that. Like, already, he said. I said, yes. It's a bit early, isn't it? It's just 10 o'clock. You know, they used to get our leg pulled with things like that. We used to make our own entertainment in a natural way, you know. You work together as a team all the time. But the team that is hiccups now and then, all to the benefit, the humorous went. You know what I mean?
There must have been varied, the meals, depending upon who was cooking. There must have been quite varied in quality, etc., the meals, depending on who was cooking.
Exactly, yes. And we let off each other, yeah. We saw what Paul said, well, who's on there tomorrow? So, oh, get away. Who's on? Oh, won't get much tomorrow. So-and-so was on, like, you know, it was the spice of life in a way.
What were you cooking? What kind of meals were you making each other?
Well, we had a little camera set aside, like, and we had, I forget what we had, though. We had petrol burners, or some oil burners. And sometimes we'd have, like, a trench fire outside and put the things in there to boil things up with and that. And very rare we could roast any meat, was all, like, boiled or something, which you can understand that, can't you? But we managed all right.
And you'd get your food from back in headquarters area?
They come round and give us a food every so often, like every 2 or 3 days, as far as I can remember. We got our rations and all that, and that was it.
Did you get any leisure activities? Was there time for leisure activities?
Leisure, well, on a cluster site, we've got a few later on, but on a searchlight, a single light, we just had to clean all the gear up, maintain it and that, and make our own amusement sort of style. And sometimes we'd get down the local village on a morning evening or an afternoon, like, everything was done. The sergeant in charge, he'd make sure everything was going all right, like, and on afternoon, sometimes we'd go down to Whitby. I remember one day, I was at Ellerbeck, and I got a bus from Picton area to Whitby to go to the pictures. Me and a friend of mine there. And when we go back, we got as far back as Slights in Bluebank. And the buses would run after 10 o'clock at night or something, or 9 o'clock. So we had to walk from Slights at Bluebank right over to Ellerbeck. We never thought we were going to get home that. We got home in the early hours of the morning, about 2:30 or something. Things like that used to happen to us, you see. We couldn't get transport back, we had to walk it back. But it was part of the game.
After a while, did the days become long and boring, and did that affect your relationships within your small group? You know, you're really living on top of each other in a way.
I think we seemed to get on all right. Sometimes I'd go around, for instance, I learned to swim at Grossman in a deep pool there. I couldn't swim before that. Things like that in the summer down, like. And sometimes the officer in charge of the site, across the site, he would take us on a rope march. I always remember one officer, we'd been on a rope march, we'd come back to Grossman, and he'd either run water the stream down in the valley, like. We sat down there for a spell, like. He said to me, now, remember today, he says, when you get overseas, you remember today, the running water, things like that. And what that officer said, he used to often come back to me when I've got in Africa.
Do you remember his name?
No, I couldn't remember. He's a junior officer. Well, another officer, I forget the names of them now. One officer, they called him Brown. Ah, that was. This is funny, this is. I'd come in out the regular army and joined the Terriers again. And I was very good at the rifles. I'd been from Woolley's Depot and I was superior to them in a way because we in the regular army did it more so than others, obviously. And Brown, he was out of Brown Sawmills in Stockton Street. Remember that? Oh, you wouldn't remember that, would you? The Lone and Arty probably, yeah. This family had their Brown Sawmill in Stockton Street at the time. The wood was taken in with lorries and all that. Anyway, he was in the territorials. And I had to single me out. And I had to stand facing the squad when they're learning rifle drill. And what I did, I could do from the other way around. So when you're facing it, you're the opposite way around. So I changed over to this side. I thought, try there, see what happens. The people who were watching me, take me time from me, they didn't notice it. But this officer, I said to him, look at them, and look at me like this, you know, I thought, he's twigged it. But he never said anything. Things like that we used to do, like, you know. That was amusing in a way, like.
Do you remember who was commanding the regiment?
They called him Brown, he was a junior officer.
I'm thinking of the colonel of the regiment. Did you know who he was? Do you remember
him? I can't remember now.
Did you get on well with the officers?
Yeah, I got all right with them. One of us, Morrell called one of us, before the war, when I was doing a camp just outside of Whitby, I'd been on the docks wagon carrying wood at home, and had a broken shoulder, the corner, with skin, not me bones, like. And this man, he was a sister, his office was in Grange, Victoria Road, and he carried my rifle for me, yes. Oh, they were pretty good officers on the way, yeah.
Mm. NCOs, what memories have you got of the NCOs when you're on the site?
We had a sergeant, he was a safe one. Sometimes I'd have a lance jack as well.
And were they all right?
Well, some were a bit funny at times, like, ah, I'll tell you, wouldn't they? I won't mention his name, but I'd been an MT because I'd come up with top marks. And this sergeant got us all together. And he said to us, he says, by the way, Jim, he says, you're getting a stripe. I said, oh, I, because I've come top marks, I suppose. Oh, all right, well. So, and he said to me, on the list of generator, we'll get all the number nines round. There's other people have to learn it as well, they can stand in. You have to learn each other's jobs, you see, obviously. And he said, right, he says, Jim, he says, Hastings, describe all the lubricating points on the diesel generator. So I went through them all, the lads like, with lubricating points away, and the engine and everything, like out of oil and everything. He said, you've missed one out. Oh, well, you can easily miss someone out like that, can't you? So I went to him again. He said, you've still missed one out. The third time, I still missed one out. And I went through them very carefully. And the third time he said that, I was at wondering, well, we'll come to miss one out. I said, miss one out again, Sergeant? He says, yes. Well, look, Sergeant, I says, I don't know which one it is, but you tell me which one I missed out. Now, he says, you've got to explain how to lubricate the flywheel. Do you know how to lubricate a flywheel? Come on, Harry, think about it. Well, a flywheel, but I can describe it, it's a thing that stores energy and continuous even movement. It goes round, a big heavy wheel. And that's keyed to the shaft, the crankshaft, that comes from the generator down there and then into the engine, you see. Engine drives all that round. There's like insulation thing there, so it's kind of, well, the diesel engine didn't really matter, the diesel engine, because it wasn't on sparking plugs. But on petrol engines, you have an insulation thing, like dished in. Anyway, I said, oh, don't lubricate a flywheel. He said, yes. Oh. Well, not thinking, like I said to him. I said, don't lubricate a flywheel. He said, you missed that one out. I said, you can't. I never raised it at the time. What I should have said to him, well, would you do the honours of showing it to them? But I explained to him straight away why. It's keyed on. And I was that disgusted with that. Come the smart aleck with it, like. It turned me against Territory Regiments, NCO, so partly a bit. I was thought about them at the time, like being the regular army. Because you always put the Territory as good as the regular army. Well, obviously, like. And I thought, oh, how's he got these three stripes like that? I said, oh, by the way, Sergeant, I said, that stripe you're on about, me getting a stripe, just forget about it. You know, then the main frame I took, because before I went there, a sergeant on a blue bank, before I went there, we come back from Central Camp one day, and he said to me, we've been, your name was brought up at Central Camp, if you pull your socks up, there's three stripes waiting for you. Yeah, they said, I don't want them. You don't want three stripes? I said, no. And when this happened, I'm more sure I didn't want them. And I think what brought this on was I had a diesel generator, the modern ones of that day and age. They used to have on the fairgrounds at their shows later on. And they took mine off me and they gave me a key. It was a petrol one, air-cooled, from the First World War. They took it off me and they gave me this one. And when I got it, when they stuck arc on the searchlight, the engine and stopped, the res went down, the voltage jumps went down on the switchboard straight away. I thought, oh, how's that happened like that? I looked at the engine, went through it all. I'd learned all the theories of the engine. I was really interested in the Mary. And then I thought, it's got three intakes here in the carburetor. I thought, it's getting a weak liquid in, a weak mixture here. So what I did, I took two of them off, there's like little pressing round things, gauze on them. I put some cloth on them, pressed them in, so no air would get through, very little. They only come through one, like the modern day engine of that day, which it is the same today. And I said, I'll try it now, strike arc now, see what happens. I looked the engines up, so all the bullies went like in the switchboard and that. And the runners back on the field court. It's all right, Jim, it's all lovely. We did that during the day, like.